Do you ever feel stuck, like you're living your life on autopilot? Are you ready to shift into high gear and reach the success you so richly deserve? Welcome to the Play Big Movement podcast. I am your host, Sharon Lecter, entrepreneur, business strategist, and best-selling author. Playing big is not about settling for good enough or being comfortable. It is about reaching your highest potential and achieving your greatest success. Join me in my Play Big movement as I interview top experts in business, money, and entrepreneurship, all ready to serve you and to help you play big, be number one in your field, live your legacy, and create maximum impact. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Play Big Movement podcast. I'm here with my one and only dear husband, my first and my last husband here, Michael Lecter. We're doing a three-part series on intellectual property. The first section was on identifying your intellectual property. Today is part number two. We're going to be talking about protecting intellectual property. And then the third segment will be on how to leverage it and make money from it. So today is going to, you know, there's a lot to cover in protecting intellectual property. So today we're going to be hitting, you know, Mike's going to be talking really just the major categories and a few things to pay attention to. We do cover this very, very in depth in our Essential Components of a Successful Business, which is a program available through my website. But we want you to think about, you know, make sure you've listened to segment number one and identifying your intellectual property. And then Mike's going to talk about the various ways that you can protect it. So,
okay, well, quick recap. So competitive advantage, what makes your customers want to work with you instead of your competition, buy your stuff rather than theirs, or gives you a competitive, an economic advantage, gives you better margins, either because you're able to do things more quickly or less expensively or more cost effectively. Having that intellectual, that competitive advantage is great, but if the bad guys can copy it, as soon as you hit the marketplace, it doesn't do you much good. It has to be sustainable. Most of the time when you're talking about competitive advantage that's sustainable, it involves intellectual property. So what's intellectual property? Intellectual property is the fruits of your creativity. It's the results of invention, innovation, your knowledge, your expertise. Yeah. Okay. So again, it's your intellectual effort. It's the fruit of that intellectual effort. Now, there are a lot of different types of intellectual property. Most people think of patents, copyrights, and trademarks when they speak of intellectual property, but it's a whole lot more than that. It's your expertise and know-how. It's your goodwill with the customers. And all of those things can be protected. Now, there's a toolbox of intellectual, of legal mechanisms that are available to protect your intellectual property. There's trade secret protection, contractual protection, which kind of goes hand in glove with trade secrets. There are patents, copyrights, trademarks, mask work protection. Did I forget anything?
No, I think that's good. And trade secrets, of course, the most favorite one, you know, the most famous one is the formula to Coca-Cola. But they have so many different protections. You know, the problem with trade secrets is that once somebody knows it, it's not a secret anymore.
Right? Anything that can be ascertained from publicly available information just plain can't be a trade secret. If they can figure it out from what you put on the market, you've got to resort to something else, typically patents, assuming that you can do that, or contracts.
And contracts, you know, when you think about employee contracts, that's intellectual property, right?
That's intellectual property, or it can be anyway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But typically the type of contract that we're looking at is a confidentiality agreement or a license agreement. Basically, it's preventing people from, it's creating a fiction of secrecy. Okay, you're giving somebody access to your confidential information, but they're obligated not to use it in ways other than you permit them, and to keep it confidential themselves.
We have a whole section on contracts because it's important. You know, we've experienced this in our mm-hmm. long careers, both of us, and the fact that, you know, you have an agreement with somebody. Well, your understanding and theirs should be on the same page, but more than likely you have different emotions that you come to the table, different expectations. And so it's important that that mm-hmm. contract spell out exactly what the responsibilities of each party are and what the expectations and what the accountability is, so that you don't have questions anymore.
If it's important to you, it needs to be very precisely and explicitly laid out in that agreement. And let's face it, there are a lot of times when there are legitimate misunderstandings. Your contract might say red. You're thinking light red. They're thinking dark red. It's both, you know, it's red. So it's a legitimate misunderstanding. So if it's important that it's light red to you, then the contract needs to say light red.
And the other thing that we bring up when we talk about this in that segment is that when you're a small company and you're making a deal with a big company, there's no guarantee that that person that you're negotiating with mm-hmm. is going to be there in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. You're still going to be there because it's your company. So you want to make sure that the agreement you have with that big company spells out what your expectations and their responsibilities and their accountability is, so that you can point to the contract, not to, well, he said, she said. It's important.
So I got kind of distracted. Let's go back to the legal protection mechanisms for intellectual property. Each one is designed to protect a particular type of intellectual property. So trade secret protection applies to things that you can keep secret. And to do that, in order to have a legally protectable trade secret, as opposed to a practical trade secret, because the bad guys just don't have access to it, you have to take reasonable measures to keep it secret. What that means basically is control access to it, and to have a written agreement with everybody that has access to it that says they're going to keep it secret. All it takes is one person to have access to it that's not obligated to keep it secret, and you lose the ability to protect your trade secrets. They're not trade secrets anymore. Once a cat's out of the bag, it's gone. Okay. Patents protect invention. Now, they're basically a deal between the government and the inventor to get the information out to the public. You know, back in the dark ages, at least as I refer to them, everything was kept secret. And the guilds and the church had all the technology. And if somebody spoke out of turn, off with their head. You know, we don't do that anymore. But the problem was, technology was stymied. It just stopped. And that's why the Dark Ages went for as long as it did. Our founding fathers understood that was a problem. So they built the patent system and the copyright system into the Constitution to try to give inventors and authors incentive to get their information out to the public.
And that really helps create innovation, right?
Yeah. That was the idea. So the deal is, the inventor teaches the public how to use their invention, and in return for that, they get to keep them from using it for a period of time. Under present law, that's 20 years from when you file the application.
And it's also probably the most expensive way to protect your intellectual property. It gives you the greatest protection, and it's expensive. And so I want to bring it up now, Mike, because a lot of people say, well, I can't afford a patent, so I'm going to do a trademark, and I'm going to be fast to market. And so I know you have a standard response to that.
Yeah,
so
the real question isn't how much it's going to cost to get the patent. It's what it'll cost you if you don't get the patent. There were these guys back in the 80s who came up with this really blockbuster idea. Spreadsheet program. Okay? It was the very first spreadsheet program. It literally made the age of the personal computer. Because before this program, the average Joe didn't have any use for a computer. Only the nerds, the techno
guys. He's pointing to himself.
Yes, I am. business people typically didn't have a good reason to use a personal computer until this program came out.
So you think about Excel. Well, before that was Lotus 1-2-3. Is that what you're talking about?
No, ma'am. How many of you have heard of VisiCalc? Software Arts.
Yeah.
Dan Bricklin and I'm embarrassed to say the other fellow's name isn't coming to mind, but they invented VisiCalc. They made the age of the personal computer. And I mean, this was a blockbuster program for its day. The problem was they went to a patent attorney and they decided it was just too darn expensive to get patent protection.
And somebody asked him later if he thought it was, if it cost him much money.
He was on a talk show and the host asked him, you think that it made a difference that you didn't get a patent? And you had to see the expression in his face. He sort of leans back in his chair and he looks up and he goes, yeah, only several hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's why I say the real question is, what will it cost you if you don't take the steps to adequately protect your invention? Now, sometimes patents are just not in the cards, but you always want to look to see if they are. Always. And then you make a decision. Is it something that you can keep secret? Frankly, most of the time it's not. Most products, as soon as they're on the market, can be reverse engineered, unless you're able to distribute them under some sort of a license as opposed to selling them. Then you can control what's going on.
And most of what he's been talking about is called a utility patent.
That's
right.
There's
also a design patent, which is basically how something looks, right?
That's right. Very good point. Yeah, the design patent is intended to protect the ornamental appearance of products as opposed to the utilitarian aspects that the utility patent covers. So the utility patent covers what it does and how it works. The design patent covers how it looks. And there is some overlap between design patents, trademarks, and copyrights. But I don't know that we've got time to
We're gonna jump to trademarks, but I wanna add that it's important to get the right kind of advice. And we've talked about this on every show. Make sure you have the right counsel. The patent law is a court all unto itself, the patent office, and that's a nationwide bar that Michael is qualified for. You want to make sure you have a patent lawyer who's going to help you with this.
Yeah, there is a special bar, an additional bar, that patent attorneys have to take. So there are people called patent agents that passed the patent bar but are not a member of a state bar. They're typically engineers that got experience in patents and were able to. Now, they're able to represent an inventor before the patent office, but they can't do contracts, they can't do litigation, things like that.
So it's important to know what questions to ask. So let's jump to the next one.
And just one thing.
Oh, all right.
Be very careful about picking your attorney. You want to make sure that you've got an attorney that's not only got patent experience, because patent may not be the answer, but you need to know whether it is or not. You also want to have an attorney that has commercial experience or is a member of a firm that has people that they can take questions to. So anyway, beware of the attorney that says he can do everything or she can do everything. It's very specialized these days.
Well, the world is that way. I mean, same thing with accountants. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to make sure you've got somebody that specializes in the area and has experience. You don't want them learning on your dime, so.
Yep. Okay, trademarks. Trademarks connect your product to you. They actually were the original consumer protection law.
So people think trademark equals logo. That is
well, logo.
That, right?
Yeah, logo is a form of trademark. Mm-hmm. It all goes back again to the Dark Ages, when consumers needed a way to determine where a product came from. Who was the craftsman that made that piece of metal or that leatherware?
It identifies the source.
And it was the public's right. They were permitted to, they had to be able to rely on that. And over time, it became an intellectual property right of the craftsman, because it attached their goodwill to their products. It was the connection. Mm-hmm. And that aspects of that carry forward even to today. It's only recently that you could license somebody else to use your trademark. And when I say recently, I mean within the last 100 years. Before that, if you let anybody use your trademark other than you, you lost your rights. Mm. Because the public had a right to assume that anything that had that mark on it came from the same place.
And today, when we talk in Section 3 about leveraging, we're going to talk about licensing and collaboration and joint venture, where you actually will be sharing logos and trademarks, and you want to make sure that it's, you know, the agreement is airtight.
Yeah, and this is where you've got a holdover from those early days. You license a trademark, you have to exert quality control. If you don't, you lose your rights. So that goes back to that same source indicator.
Now, the trademark, again, isn't going to protect what your product does. It's just going to protect that it's yours.
It keeps the bad guys from capitalizing on your goodwill and making it seem like they're affiliated with you or associated with you or sponsored by you, or that their stuff is your stuff.
So talk about trade dress.
Okay, trade dress is another form of trademark. It's the packaging, the way that a product looks, the cover of a book, the color scheme. And people see these, and if you've used them extensively enough, and you're the only one that's using them, they become a trademark. People see this color scheme, and they know where the product came from.
So when we first started Rich Dad, the publishers we talked to said, you don't want to make your book purple, but, you know, finance books, business books should be red, green, or black. And we said, well, that's why we want to do purple, because we want to stand out. We want to be different. We want to establish our position in that market.
That's right. You want to be distinctive. And if you come up with a distinctive color scheme or distinctive packaging, distinctive mark, something that identifies with you, or can be identified with you with a little bit of work, that can be a very valuable asset.
So we established our trade dress as purple with black and gold accents. And then, you know, within a couple of years in China, they were referring to Rich Dad as the purple storm across the country, because it was such a unique, and you look at bookstores and all of a sudden you saw a purple section. And it's something that really, that trade dress helped us establish our position in the market and maintain our position.
The point was, every time you came out with a new product and it had that color scheme, the consumer was able to associate the goodwill that they had with the new product. So they would want to buy that new product because it came from you. They knew it came from you because of the color scheme.
Same thing if you think about Chicken Soup for the Soul. They had a consistent appearance on all those books.
So you want to look for ways that you can build the trademarks into your products. And it's something that any business can do. It can be something as simple as the color of a truck or the color of uniforms or a particular hat.
So when we started working with the Napoleon Hill Foundation, you know, Michael recommended to them, because Think and Grow Rich as a trademark with books, you can't trademark one title. And so Michael's suggestion, and what we've been doing with the Napoleon Hill Foundation, is we have a Think and Grow Rich series of books. So 3 Feet from Gold, Outwitting the Devil, Think and Grow Rich for Women are all part of this Think and Grow Rich series of books, which has allowed the foundation once again to affirm its ownership of that trademark.
And they're able to capitalize on the goodwill associated with the Think and Grow Rich brand. Okay, let's see, what have I forgotten? Copyrights. Copyrights protect expression, artistic expression, literary expression. Okay, they protect the expression, but they don't protect the idea that's being expressed. For example, I write a paper about my latest and greatest invention. Sharon gets a copy of this paper. She makes the invention. I couldn't stop her from doing that based on the copyright. The only thing that I could stop her from doing is making a copy of the paper.
And so actually today what happens is that there are now software programs you can use to make sure that when you write something for the internet, you can check it to make sure that, that there's no plagiarism involved.
Yeah.
And so that you are not, you know, seen as copying something.
So today where you've got a universally pervasive internet and you can copy something with the swish of a finger and a click of a button, copyright becomes a big deal. Just because something is on the internet does not mean that copyrights don't apply. They do. You copy something off of the internet and you could very well be infringing someone's copyright. Same thing with using music in the podcasts or whatever. You need to have the appropriate licenses.
Yeah, a lot of people are doing that. We end up getting the rights to be able to use it when you have music for your podcast. You want to make sure you've taken the step to do that.
Yeah, and there are various organizations that you can contact to get a license to do different things way beyond.
So for instance, like the example of the copyright, if you have a menu on how to make something, all right. So if somebody takes that and copies that exact menu, then they're infringing your copyright. But if they take your menu and your recipe and they make a few changes here and there so that their recipe is different from yours, is it copyright protected?
Well,
it
depends on how many changes they made, whether they organized it in precisely the same way. Now, if something is dictated by function, in other words, the steps, the order of the steps are there for a reason. You have to do them in order to make the recipe. You know, you got to put the chocolate in before you cook it. Then there's nothing arbitrary about that. There's no, that's not expression. It's function, not protectable by copyright. Now, if you're able to haphazardly throw these things in, the order that you give them could be copyrightable. The structure, the sequence, the organization. But it's an ad hoc analysis that you have to make every time to see whether you are taking copyrightable elements. So copyright infringement is shown by showing that there was in fact copying, and that's typically done by showing that there was access to the copyrighted work and substantial similarities between the work. Then you have to show beyond that that there was misappropriation of copyrightable stuff, things that, that are protected by copyright. Copyrights don't apply to facts. Okay, just because you describe a fact doesn't mean that you take that fact away from everybody.
Well, one of the things you've taught me is that, you know, once you, when you write something, you establish, you have created a copyright to that because it's
a source
from you. But there's a difference between that and a registered copyright. So talk a little bit about the step to register.
Okay, well, copyrights under the present law are automatic. As soon as you put something down on paper, enter it into a computer, you put it in a fixed form, something that is can be read or viewed or listened to, you've got the copyright. But under the present law, you can't enforce that copyright in the courts unless you register it. Registering it is basically filling out the appropriate forms and getting that together with samples to the Copyright Office. There are different views on how far that process has to go before you can enforce the copyright.
So it's taking a step back, because we didn't cover this when we talked about trademarks. We have a similar issue as far as registered trademarks, right?
Yeah. Now, trademarks have got two facets. There's a common law trademark that you get simply by using a mark. If you're the first to use a mark with a given type of goods in a given geographical area, you get the exclusive rights to use that mark with those goods in that geographical area. Now, the problem is if somebody in a different geographical area comes up with the same mark and they use it with identical goods and they didn't know about you, they get rights in that distant area. So you have concurrent users. How do you keep that from happening? That's where registration comes in. If you register the trademark with the federal government, then it gives constructive notice to everybody. And so somebody in a distant geography can't get rights to it.
And there was like an example was, I think, Esso and Exxon.
Yeah. Years back, the company that we knew as Esso changed to Exxon because there was a little business in one little area that had beat them to the punch. They were using Esso before the big oil company did. And so because they couldn't advertise into that area, they decided it was easier just to change the mark to Exxon.
So it's very important, and it's pretty easy to do a trademark search, right?
Oh, yeah. There you get on the internet, you do a Google-type search, and you go to USPTO.gov.
USPTO.gov.
And you do the same sort of Boolean search on their database. They've got a database of registered trademarks.
And when you come, and that's, again, important to have an attorney help you when it's a really important trademark, because you want to make sure you get the trademark in certain, that you do it in certain classes of goods. And so, for instance, it might be books, it might be games, it might be, online learning, all those things. You have to make sure you're getting the protection where you need it.
The registration pertains only to the goods that you describe.
So using your mark on clothing, you're going to need to get the mark protected in that class, in that category. And so at the very beginning, you were talking about toolbox. And the reason you use toolbox is that these are all various mechanisms and ways to protect your intellectual property, but they're not exclusive of one another. So share a
little bit. That's right. What you want to do is have a strategy. You want to use all of the different protection mechanisms to protect the different aspects of your business and your products, your services, to the best effect. You want to get trademarks on everything you possibly can. There's something magical about putting a name on something. You would keep things secret until you determine whether or not you're going to go for patent protection, and through the process you would keep it secret, or you just keep it secret if you decide not to go for patent process. You want to make sure that you consider whether there are unique aspects to the way your products look. If you can turn that into a trademark, that's fantastic. Now, to do that, when you have a word mark or a logo, the only thing it can be is a source identifier. Okay? If it is something that describes what you're doing, though, it may not really operate as a trademark. The more descriptive something is, a slogan, the less protectable it is. And if it's a generic term for something, the name of something, you can't get trademarks on that. You can't get the trademark shoe for shoes.
And sometimes people will apply for trademarks and they'll be denied because it's too generic, right?
Or too descriptive. Now, sometimes you can take a term that's descriptive, but not generic, and over time turn it into a trademark. You do that through exclusive use and extended use and lots of advertising.
And what we did actually with Pay Your Family First, because we established that as a exclusive to us, and we were able to get granted the trademarks.
Yeah. Now, the same thing goes with trade dress. Because just because you put a color scheme on something doesn't mean that the public immediately recognizes that as identifying it as coming from you. So you want to make sure that through your advertising and the exclusivity of use, You're the only one. You want to make sure you're the only one using that. You want it to stay distinctive. If everybody else starts using it, it's not distinctive anymore. How can you stop that? Well, once it becomes a trademark, you can stop it. But until then, you've got to come up with something else.
So when we did
and
the
that's design patents.
Yeah, and so when we talk about the talking book industry, you know, that we built for children's talking books, and Mike assisted the company with getting the patent on the technology. We had the trademark logos. We had a consistent look and feel on the book so that it was a, you know, a trade dress. And then we had each book was copyrighted as well. So we made sure we used every tool in the toolbox as possible. Same thing at Rich Dad. The cash flow game, Mike was able to secure patent protection on the cash flow game on how the technology and the science behind the game. But then we had all the cards and the instructions were copyrighted. The look of the book, of the board game itself had the protection of the trade dress, and the trademarks were, we made sure the right trademarks were everywhere. And so it was, you know, it was, it's actually a strategy that's important in your business, is to strategize the best way to create intellectual property, protect it. And then in part three of this series, we're going to talk about how to leverage that. So do you want to wrap up the various mechanisms on the different types of intellectual property?
Okay. Patents protect invention. I mean, utility patents. Design patents protect the appearance of a product. Trademark protects your goodwill and prevents the bad guys from capitalizing on your goodwill. Copyrights protect your expression, your artistic and literary expression.
And the weakest link of all of those is trade secret, right?
That's right. Trade secrets protect things that you can keep secret, either through physical preventing people from getting access to it, or through contractual mechanisms.
Okay, so section one, we talked about identifying intellectual property. Today's section, we're talking about the various ways to protect it. And again, I want to wrap up by saying how important it is to make sure you have the right advisor to help you understand the right way to strategize how to protect. And even, you know, when you think about the terms, what's the term of a copyright? What's the term of a trademark? What's the term of the patent, so that you have long-term protection, or at least strategize how to keep it as long as possible? And so having the right kind of support and the attorney. Some people try to file their own patents and, you know, and,
Let me, I am a firm believer in doing what you can do as a business person without getting attorneys involved. But there are certain things that you absolutely need to have competent counsel working on. Utility patents are first and foremost among those. Design patents, after you've been shown how to do it, it's primarily drafting and knowing what views of a you can do. That's something that a company can very often do on its own once they've had some initial guidance. Trademarks, the same thing. A company can very often pursue trademark registration on their own once they've had some guidance, particularly when they're talking about the same goods, just different trademarks for variations of those goods.
And I can attest to what he's saying, because having been married for 38 years, when you talk about patents, there's a section called claims. And one word can change a claim. And so it's very important to have somebody who really is familiar and understands how to best structure those claims to give you the greatest, the most specific protection, and the widest protection.
Yeah, utility patent is a document that's intended to be enforced against the bad guys, potential infringers, or potential co-venturers, licensees. And it's a very, very technical document, technical from both a technological and from a legal standpoint. And unless it's done very precisely, it doesn't do you much good.
So remember the recap of the various tools and what they protect: expression of the idea, source of the idea, and the actual creation, innovation of an idea. And so those are the, you know, the expression is the copyright, the source is the trademark, mm-hmm. and the innovation is the patent, which is a very high level summary of what Michael has just shared. So we're going to next talk about how to, in section three of the series, we're going to be talking about how to leverage that from a standpoint of an ongoing practice. So go back and rewatch and re-listen to number one on identifying your intellectual property. And then give yourself an honest assessment. Have you protected what you can protect? And if not, go ahead and take that action. We're sharing this because we want you to take action to protect your intellectual property. And you know, again, remember, patent attorneys are a national bar, so it doesn't have to be a local attorney. Find somebody that is experienced in what you want to do so that you, they're giving you the advantage of their knowledge and experience. And then let's talk about how to make money from it in the next section. So, Michael, thank you for sticking with me. And
we will
see you in segment three.
Thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Please subscribe to iTunes and leave us a review, as well as join us in other areas of social media, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Sharon Lecter, and for Facebook, author Sharon Lecter. Thank you so much and have a fabulous day.